Hello and welcome to Small Business Stories, a podcast brought to you by Purely Personal Marketing. My name is Robin and I'll be bringing you inspiring and insightful real life stories from real life business owners around the globe. And we'll be sharing our top tips and our own personal experiences in business with you all. Send us your questions on our social media. Look for Purely Personal Marketing. Don't forget to subscribe and to download this podcast. And you will have my eternal gratitude. Thanks so much for listening. Let's get to it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Small Business Stories. You're hearing Robin, hello, your host here. And I have got a lovely guest on with me today. Her name is Victoria Hutton, and she is a brand videographer. I'm very, very excited to have her on. She's worked with some amazing brands, and I'm really excited to share her story and kind of learn a bit more about her journey into freelance life as well as videography life, really. So I'm going to give you a clap. Welcome to Small Business Stories, Victoria.
Thank you. That's nice.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
I don't know if you would like to just give us a little summary, just like a little, you know, a little brief over of what you do, who you are, where'd you come from?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am, as you said, a brand videographer. So I work primarily with female focused brands, and that could be independent business owners or publishers or large international brands to create video content and campaigns. So editorial and commercial video content. And I've been doing that for myself now for about coming up 2 years. And prior to that, I was in-house. I started my career at Mumsnet, which is where I first picked up a camera and learned a lot of it on the job, having previously trained in journalism and joined Mumsnet on the press and communications team. I spent quite a few years at Mumsnet, ultimately shooting and editing all the fantastic guests that they had coming through the doors, which we must get into later. And then after that, I joined Hello Magazine as head of their video department and had equally exciting times shooting exclusives and I don't know, royal weddings and red carpets and everything that you'd expect from Hello Magazine before going freelance.
Amazing. That's really interesting. What made you, like, when you're at Mumsnet, what made you go, I just want to pick up that camera and get involved? Were you just really, you just loved what that department were doing?
I'll set the scene because there was no department because it was 2013 or early 2014.
Yeah.
And so, as I said, I joined them as the press and communications intern. It was paid internship. And it was an amazing brand to join. And it also meant I could come to London on a paid internship for 6 months and kind of get a feel of things and whether that was where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And whilst I was there, they had incredible guests coming in. So, you know, people like Idris Elba, all the way to sort of Hairy Bikers and, you know, Nick Clegg, like everyone, really. And there was no one in-house who had the time or the skills to shoot those interviews. And also it was only just becoming a priority. In 2014, you know, it wasn't as common for a brand to have an in-house video department.
Yeah.
YouTube was very much a thing, but Facebook video hadn't really emerged in the way that we know it now, nor had Instagram, let alone, you know, very, very short form video. So it was a case of picking up the dusty old camera that was in the cupboard, the existing kit that for some reason someone had bought a camcorder ages ago, and starting off badly and getting better in quite a short space of time because you're doing it for a brand, and us realizing the opportunity quite quickly and then them trusting me to run with it.
That's so cool. And so it's wild to think that actually that isn't that long ago.
No, it's not. It's, you know, it's mad.
And how important it is now for brands, you know, I think of all sizes to embrace the video. You know, working in social media, of course, I know that, you know, people consume video content far more and also a bit more effectively than any other kind of content. And that's why these platforms are pushing video content. So I guess in a way for you, you came into it at just the right point.
It was a mix of great timing, great opportunity, you know, great trust from those, you know, the the people at Mumsnet, you know, to allow me to kind of run with that and grow it into something. And yeah, it was brilliant because we spent relatively a short amount of time establishing what we could do with video in-house and how that would work editorially. And then because Mumsnet was already an amazing powerhouse brand, the commercial interest was there immediately. Yeah. So the stakes are instantly higher. Yeah. So then again, you're kind of constantly learning and doing, and it just all evolved very quickly. So yeah, I spent the next 4 years there with a team that we then grew, and you know, we did campaigns for amazing brands, you know, whether it was sort of household names like sort of Lidl and Tesco, or we did sort of Disney and Sky campaigns, paid partnerships and sponsored content between the brand and Mumsnet, as well as our editorial content.
That's brilliant. And I guess that would have opened up so many more doors for a whole new revenue as well.
It was massive.
For Mumsnet. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, suddenly this whole new kind of in-stream of income, which is excellent. So were you always into kind of photography, video, or was it just something that literally just happened like a spark?
I wasn't always into it, no. And it's funny, actually, because I work, I have an unofficial business partner, Alice, who I work with as often as I can on shoots. And she, we very much like complete each other. And she is someone who cannot handle the idea of never picking up a camera again. You know, that to her would be complete devastation. But for me, it's not the kit and it's not the format that motivates me. So I think it was always more about storytelling. So yeah. My training was in journalism, and I originally wanted to be a features writer, and I absolutely was not interested in the video element of journalism to begin with, only because for me that conjured up visions of running down the street with a massive camera trying to get someone to talk to you who doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really drawn to that competitive, or to be honest, just entirely news focused element of journalism. I was much more attracted to features. So I think I took all of that and I took the storytelling part, which is what I really care about and still is very much my USP today. And it happened to be that the format changed over the years because I landed with video.
That's brilliant. Amazing. What a journey. And so, what did you want to be when you were a child? Did you always want to be a journalist? Do you know, because I asked this question to guests and they'll say something completely different to what they are kind of doing now. What did you want to do?
I did always want to do something creative. So when I was very little, I would quite often disappear for hours and I'd come back with, you know, poems, really long, long poems. I loved Spike Milligan and people like that. So I was always writing even when I was really, really little. And I also, this is quite common, I think, with people that are journalists. I also had a bit of a, you know, performance background, like a love for dancing and acting. Yeah. And like anecdotally, you find that quite a lot with journalists. They're quite creatively minded. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so funny hearing you say that because I loved writing as well. I used to write songs, I used to write poetry, write stories as a young child. And as we were discussing before we kind of came on to record, I did an NCTJ in journalism as well. For the exact same reason as you, I just didn't want to be hunting people down to get a story. But I taught dance and I danced for 40, well, I did ballet for 14 years and so forth, and then studied dance when I was at college. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, when you just have that kind of creative nature, I don't know about you, but you can kind of turn your hands to a lot of things so long as it's creative.
I think so. I think so. And actually, I've said this before, I actually use my dance, I wouldn't say training, that's too formal. I just did dance classes, you know, 10 years or so. Yeah. But I use that every day in editing because it's of the timing and because of the musicality. So I think when you, when you look back, you kind of see how all of these interests and all of these passions really can combine into what it is that you do now.
Definitely. And quite often I feel that, you know, we feel like we have to be in a box and, you know, we have to do our job and that's it. But actually I think to get really good at what you do, there's so many other things that you can pull on to, you know, to use as a strength to roll you forwards in your career, whether that's as a business owner, you know, or in an employed role. And so What advice would you have for someone that wanted to get into the creative industry, say journalism for a starter, or even writing?
Well, it is harder than ever at the moment, I appreciate, because not just because of the pandemic, but because there are fewer internships, there's fewer paid paid internships in those entry level roles. So it is competitive, although that was a really great way in for me. Yeah. To start with sort of a 6 month paid internship. I think ultimately, what it comes down to is being nice, which I think is underrated. So in terms of good with people, and that's really hard if you're young and you're just starting out, or if you've had your confidence knocked, say, and you're going back into work. It can be hard to kind of force yourself to make conversations and, you know, try and find ways to be remembered by that person. But your network, for lack of a better word, or just your relationships are really, really important. And then it's just, you've got to be good at what you do. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be an expert. You know, in my case with cameras, I wasn't an expert with cameras. And there's still loads of stuff I could learn now. We constantly are, because the industry moves so quickly.
Yeah.
But there are other elements of being good at what you do that are so valuable, like just being really reliable, being professional, being invested in the company's values wherever you are. And those are all things that I take that responsibility quite seriously and always have. So I think, that's felt by people that you are working for.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I think those two things can be what opens up more doors for you.
It's so true. I remember when I was in an employed role and I had somebody contact me and say, oh, my dad is looking for someone to help with social media. And at the time I was just in a sales role, excuse me, but I wanted to go more into social media marketing and that kind of thing and learn the ropes. And I remember, anyway, I got the job and I remember being in that role and just thinking, do you know what? Thank God that I'm nice to people, because otherwise this opportunity wouldn't have come around. Because it's just like you say, being kind to people, just being nice and being taking a role seriously, and especially I guess in when it comes to marketing or videography, if you're telling those stories for that brand, you have to really take on board what
you have to care.
You have to just give a shit, and you have to really, really care about what you do. And I also think that the more passionate you are, the more that people will want to work with you as well. So, and I don't think you can fake passion. I think people can detect that, you know. So,
and also, I feel that. You know, I worry sometimes, I know how frustrating it is when you get advice like that seems like quite vague or quite airy. It's a bit like when people say trust your gut, and you're like, no, practically, how do I do that? But I've gone back a couple of times to my old uni and spoken to, current students and soon to be grads. And it really, it was difficult to hear, you know, clearly someone who was very brilliant say, you know, I just don't know how I'm going to stand out. How am I going to do it? Because they were obviously really overwhelmed by this idea of, you know, how competitive it was. And I was like, do you know what? I have worked or encountered plenty of people there's nothing wrong with this, but for whom their job is just their job. And that's fine. Or we've all encountered people who are horrible with people or really are not team players. So it's actually these things that we say, you have to be passionate, you know, that's unique. It actually isn't every single person that walks through the door who has those qualities. Some people are really entitled. They're not going to turn up when you tell them to turn up. They're going to forget the key thing that you need to, that they need to bring.
Yeah.
Or they're not going to be reliable. So actually it is enough. It is enough to just be really, you know, to want to work hard and to make those good relationships.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you said at the start of this that, you know, it's very much kind of your contacts as well. And I think that the more that you communicate with people and the more that you just show up and you work hard, people, even if you finish working on a project for someone, they're going to remember that you did a good job, or that that you were reliable, that you showed up, that you were passionate, that you didn't, you didn't kind of, you know, make life difficult. You just got on with the job and then put your input in and that kind of thing where it was, you know, when there was a place for it. Cause you know,
and those are your contacts, you know, anyone that you ever do any kind of work for, you ever sit in a meeting with, if you're, you know, currently in house. Cause I think, you know, have contacts or network is another one where you think, oh, but how, you know. And I think for me, you know, I didn't know anyone in London when I came. I didn't go to, you know, I went to a school that was really suffering. Actually, the secondary school that I was in was in a terrible state when I was in. I went to a really good uni that's known for journalism. And I think that can open up doors where you might have a connection in that way with someone who's hiring or, you know, or who's commissioning, that kind of thing. But you can make contacts from nothing. This is not, I mean, I think you hear a lot of like annoying stories where so-and-so's aunt or so-and-so, I don't know, like friend of my parent. And it doesn't have to be that way. I didn't have any of that. You can turn up, be nice, work hard and make your own connections. Yeah,
definitely. And I heard someone say on a podcast recently that, you know, if you want the sale, like if I had to say to you, go and get that sale now, how would you get that sale? And I thought to myself, well, what would I do? I would email someone or I would ring them, someone that I know, and say, hey, I've got my books open for a new client. I'm interested in working with you. Are you still, if you're not interested, do you know someone that is? I think that can be applied to so many things, because once, even in your industry, you know, of course you don't want to badger people, but if you have built that relationship and then you find that you're coming to an end of a project, you might then be able to drop someone an email that you worked with on another project and say, hey, I've got some free time over the next couple of months. Have you got anything that I can work on? Or do you know someone that is, that you wouldn't mind recommending me to? And sometimes it does just take, once you've built those relationships, just as kind of knock on doors a little bit and go a little bit, I call it a little bit old school. I know in marketing, we use a lot about brand awareness and all these kind of things, but sometimes you have to dial it back and just knock on doors and just talk to your contacts as well.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. And that will kind of get a foot in the doors as well. So I would like to know, how has life been for you over the last 2 years since you went freelance?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's probably closer to 18 months, and sort of 6 months in, we all got the stay at home order. So it's been, it was quite obviously for everyone, it's been a completely up and down period. I was really lucky that I had clients straight away, and that was, I mean, I knew that, so that was one of the reasons where I felt okay to take the leap to go freelance, because I had more and more people asking me to do work for them on a freelance basis. So thankfully I was able to have a really productive first 6 or 8 months, whatever it was, before we went into lockdown. And I would be okay for a couple of months after that. It obviously didn't hit a great time for anyone, but obviously for freelancers and small business owners, it came with its own consequences. So, I mean, I cannot complain at all. Like, I couldn't work during the first lockdown. I couldn't do traditional, there was no shoots, so you couldn't go out and shoot. That sort of stopped overnight. Yeah. But it did make me quickly innovate, quickly think, right, okay, I knew I was going to get to this point where I needed to diversify my income, but you know, I thought that would be in another couple of years when I just fancied doing it, not out of necessity.
Yeah.
So it sped that process up, and I carried on working because I can edit from home. I could edit existing or previous projects for people, or I could edit self-shot content that people send me. Now, as of sort of the second or third lockdown, I've been able to work. So I've always just followed the best practice and the up-to-date guidelines, and just decided, yeah, for me, I'm happy. Generally, you know, I do think about it case by case even now, but I'm generally happy to just work as long as it's to the best, you know, best guidelines.
Yeah. And so what made you want to make that change from employed working for Hello to going freelance and doing your own thing?
I'd say that my definition of success changed.
Yeah.
So I worked very hard. I think I did all the right things. I was also very privileged, very lucky to rise up through the ranks as quickly as I did in hindsight. I realize that now by how many people say, you're so young to have been head of video somewhere. And I'm like, oh yeah. But it was a combination of factors really. And I just, that comes at a cost because you're young and you're figuring stuff out and you have a lot on your shoulders. And so over time, I was sort of listening more and more to that kind of intuition where I thought, this something about this isn't sitting right. And I loved both of the companies that I was in-house with. So it definitely wasn't like a values misfit or anything. I absolutely loved both of those companies. But I just felt ultimately that I needed time to act my age a bit more. And in Mamma Mia, they say, grow back down again. And I thought that's basically how I feel. And I'm not even 30. I know I didn't really choose an easy option by then going freelance or going self-employed, but it was an uncharacteristically sort of spontaneous decision for me. And for that, I think that's a gut feeling test when you're just like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And you haven't really, I didn't really think it through in terms of, well, I'm definitely, yes. I didn't, if I'm honest, but, and yet I didn't hesitate. And I think to walk away from, I appreciate what is a dream job, two of them, and which I still, jobs that I still look back really fondly on. You have to have a really overpowering gut feeling. And that's what I had. And it's been right for me ever since.
Yeah. And that's really good to hear that. I think that quite often we stick at a job and we stick at a role and we kind of keep on going and we just think, actually, even though it doesn't sit right with you, maybe you feel a bit unfulfilled or you aren't quite getting joy in the way that you thought you would, or you have other ideas. And, I always remember years and years ago, like when I was doing waitressing jobs and stuff. Can I just say, waitressing has got to be one of my favorite jobs. So
I love waitressing.
It's so fun.
I love this. Isn't that funny? Is that because we're quite chatty and we like stories?
I love chatting to everyone and here's your food.
I like making their day. I like being like this is, making it all nice for them. That's so interesting. Because waitressing, if I didn't do what I did now, waitressing is one of those jobs that I'd be like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's great fun. And I love making all the coffees and all the lattes and getting to know how Bob's dog was getting on after his dog creation, all those little things. And I absolutely love waitressing. But I do also remember during that time thinking that, I've got other plans. Sometimes there is just something inside of you that just says, that there's something else coming. And I think you do just have to follow that instinct. And like you say, I just kind of threw hell to the wind as well. And I wouldn't say I strategized. I had an idea and, I knew I wanted to launch my own marketing company. And prior to that, I always had lots of different business ideas anyway, but this was the one that stuck with me for years. And so now I've learned to trust my gut. And now I only kind of do the things and launch the businesses and the projects that stick with me for quite a long time. Because then
when you keep coming back to them.
Exactly. And then I'm like, yes, that's what I'm going to do. And that's how I'm going to diversify. So I think gut and instinct has a lot to do with it. And I think sometimes anyone listening, if you're kind of stuck in a position and you go, God, I really just want to try that, just follow your instinct, but also have a sense of sensibility around it as well. But then again, whatever works for what works for different people.
Yeah. I can actually, you've just reminded me, actually, there was a magazine article that changed my life. No, it was just too dramatic, but it was pivotal for me. So I was reading Breathe magazine, which I absolutely love. It's a magazine with no adverts in it and really great kind of well-being content. And there was this article about, I guess, being accountable to yourself more than anything. And there was just this one line, I think it ended, it just said, what would you grant yourself permission to do today? And I just knew that what I needed to do was quit, because I didn't want to quit because it was a dream job and it was a fantastic opportunity. And how can you quit something like that? How would you throw away, all that negative language which we attribute to it. No one else has. Yeah. And then I thought, that's really interesting. That's my first thought. I would just give myself permission to say, it is all of these amazing things and I want to go.
Wow, that's powerful stuff. And was that the turning point for you where you just went, that's it? I'm now, that's in my gut, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and we literally, there was a couple of months where I sort of sat with it. And then I handed in my notice, and then a couple of months later we went traveling, very stereotypical, and you know, went all over the world pre-pandemic, and then came back and just thought, wow, I'll make a go of this then.
Amazing. So COVID aside, pandemic aside, have there been any hurdles that you've had to overcome, or like, you know, what have been those kind of low points where you've just gone, oh, am I even doing the right thing here? Has there been anything like that for you?
Yeah, of course. I think, I mean, it's overwhelmingly been really positive, and I have such good relationships with all, like with my clients. So it's generally like, you know, all really good. I think the times that have been very challenging have been when I've been learning to stick with that instinct. Basically, it's the unlearning of perfectionism or people pleasing, which gets you qualities that get you very far in-house.
Yeah.
Those qualities are very good when you're, well, but detrimental, but you know, they get rewarded.
Yeah.
And I think for me, there was and it remains an unlearning process for both of those things. And so I could count them on one hand. I think I would say I've had two negative experiences come to mind.
Yeah.
And both of them have been situations where, if I'm honest, I could have seen it coming. Yeah. And ultimately I'm absolutely head held high about how I handled it. So I think that's the most important thing. You've got to learn how to speak honestly and kindly and say, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
Or actually these are the terms, or this is what I'm happy with, or this is why it's not a good fit, whatever it is that you're trying to get across. But for me, the first two times I've done that, and I don't think I've had to do it much since on such a scale, it was so painful because it was so counter to my nature. I wanted to obviously just bend over backwards and make everything okay. And I very quickly realized that when you're freelance, when you're on your own, for some people in some situations, that will be sniffed out and it will be used to try to get what they want, because they are also
undermine
a business. Yeah, absolutely. And that can get quite ugly. And if you're someone that takes things personally, as I tend to, yeah.
Again, I do too. I do too.
We often do, don't we?
Yeah.
You get thicker skin with that. And I think I am better at that now. And it wouldn't knock me as much now. And in fact, I do, you know, I use that skill all the time. You have to have it, the ability to kind of just say, what does my gut say? I'm going to communicate this very politely, but quite firmly. So I do that now when someone, you know, I get asked to come and shoot something for 150 quid. And I'm like, no, thank you. And this is why that will not be possible for anyone. And I can't support that because it undermines even the interns in the business or whatever. Or when somebody is, you know, just pushing too far or for too much, you use those skills, but it's practice.
It really is. And I found that as well, you know, because when I went freelance, I left my employed role in marketing and went freelance, and you know, now we're a small agency, but when I was freelance, that period was so hard. And I would have clients that would message me at like 11 at night going, Robin, could you just post this for me quickly? Could you schedule that in? And I'm like, I'm in bed. I'm literally breastfeeding my child right now, who at the time was, you know, a baby, you know, and Robin, could you come to this meeting tomorrow? Bring your son with you. And you're like, hang on a minute, he's teething. It isn't like I can just, do you know what I mean? There are other things at work. And so for me, just like you, setting those boundaries was so important. Yeah. And I think that's something that thankfully it's being spoken about more now in the self-world and especially in the creative fields and stuff. But I think it's definitely something that is underrated or undervalued, because when you start, you're just like, I'll work with anyone, or you know, I just need the money to get going. I know that's a lot of people's mindset, but you know, what advice I'd give to someone that's kind of starting out freelancing, whatever industry you're going into, just think about what would you be really uncomfortable with, put yourself in a worst case scenario, and then just kind of maybe write down some ideas about how you might handle that in a polite way. That,
and also like, if I think, because you don't always have pre-warning, it's really good to like visualize that beforehand. Sometimes you're going to be caught off guard by it, even if you've sort of sensed it might be coming.
Red flag,
if that happens, red flags are really important. If you are blindsided by it, just buy yourself time. So if whatever aggression is coming up, or whatever, I don't know, confrontation, that's a better word for it. If you're getting, if you find yourself in that situation, just buy yourself the time. So just say, we'll speak about this in a day or 2 days or whatever it is. Like, let's schedule in this time to really go over it. Because if you are like me, even if I'm, I mean, this week I had to call up Apple to complain about something, and it was a big win for me because I actually got compensation from Apple. But 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah.
Because, and actually I did, my body was responding in the same way that it would two or 5 years ago. My stomach was like juddering and my hands were like getting a bit shaky. Yeah. And I was like, no, I am allowed to say that this hasn't worked, or this hasn't met my expectations, or you haven't fulfilled this, and vice versa. It doesn't have to get ugly. So yeah. I think, yes, buying yourself the time and then just trusting your gut that you're totally allowed to stand by whatever it is that you,
yeah, whatever
you're being challenged
whatever
on.
Values you want to,
yeah, 100%. It's up to you.
That's really good. And do you know what? I don't do that enough. Give myself enough time. I often feel like I have to hop on if you know there's a fire that needs putting out straight away. Of course, you put it out, but I feel like, as the business owner with a team, I have to quickly hop on it. And that's really good advice that I'm going to take on. So thank you. I'm going to start giving myself breathing space to process and then come back to. Good advice. What have been some of your highlights? And this could be kind of like in your whole career. Like, is there anything you're just like, loved working with that brand, or I loved doing that video, or, you know,
so many,
you know, getting that amount of money in my bank was amazing, or, you know, was there anything in your career that you can think of?
Yeah, so much. I mean, from my time in-house, I had a lot of quite pinch me moments, obviously. If you find yourself sitting opposite, like, I don't know, Justin Timberlake, or, you know, I met Dermot O'Leary, who I absolutely love. You know, like, there were so many sort of moments like that where you just think, this is amazing. And lots of people just don't get this opportunity. So I just have to enjoy it, really. Yeah. So I had lots of those kinds of encounters. I really loved a lot. I liked the buzz of the red carpets. Practically, they're not what they seem, right? Because actually most journalists on the red carpets are freezing and they've been waiting around for ages. But actually, I do like, you know, I used to love like arriving at the red carpets, and especially in London, everything is done to such an extreme. Yeah. So they really go all out. So, I loved going to the shoot locations and things like that. I loved covering the royal wedding. That was kind of exhausting, of course, because it was like 48 hours of nonstop coverage, but that was exciting, and I'll remember it, even though at the time you're like,
which royal wedding are we talking? Are we talking William or Harry?
Harry and Meghan.
Amazing. Yeah. Cool.
And then I think once I went freelance, I do remember absolutely, I was back at home with my family when I won my first pitch, and it was actually my first pitch that I'd done. So that was amazing. We all sort of clinked glasses. And then just working a lot of the projects that I do, they stay with me because I have a niche, and because I, attract that sort of client. It's a really good, values are aligned and sentiments aligned. So, you know, I just did a big project with a positive birth company, which is really,
I think I saw a snippet of that you shared. It's beautiful. Yeah. And as a mum and as a business owner, it was
right.
It was very refreshing to see women in a different way than how we normally see them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see women as mums, as mums are, with, you know,
and whole
away from the perfect.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
I loved that.
So,
yeah.
So exactly. So I get a lot of, a massive amount of job satisfaction from the actual projects that I work on. Lots of highlights. Yeah.
Brilliant. What advice would you have for someone that wanted to go into kind of the videography? Would you say build those connections again? Would you say kind of, if you can get an internship, do that? Or would you say, you know, just work on lots of little projects and get some experience?
I think there are a lot of opportunities. I mean, I stay subscribed now to a number of industry kind of newsletters, as well as sort of LinkedIn job updates, not because I'm looking, but because I think it's really key information to have. Who's hiring? Often you might see, obviously I get targeted with quite a few senior roles because my last job title was head of. So what that means is, although I'm not interested in going for the permanent role, often under the duties of head of video is managing the freelancers. So then I'm like, oh, they hire freelancers. Excellent. So I think you can kind of keep an eye on, you know, practically you can subscribe to different newsletters and updates to keep you in the loop about those jobs and try to get one at the right level for you. And there are different, that can look different to different people. You might be able to start assisting some photographers on set and just learn the ropes. Yeah. Or you might join, as I did, a publisher. Or you might want to go down sort of the journo route. You can learn a lot. You know, you don't, often I had the fear because I didn't train in film. I didn't know. I mean, I was really floored by the technicalities of camera work because my brain is for words more than numbers. but you can learn everything that you need to learn from either from someone else who knows what they're doing with a camera, or frankly, from YouTube. There's just so much information out there.
Yeah, there is. And also, I was going to say, what about social media videos? What about learning how to create videos for digital marketing, for websites, for Instagram? You know, I know from working with businesses that often that they just go, God, I know I need to do video, but you know what? I just want nice videos done, but they don't necessarily need a full on, you know, set in the scene. So,
this is how I diversified in lockdown, because I did see that need a lot. And I think my philosophy, if I can call it that, is that there's a place for both. There is a place to get your shiny, professional, really high quality content or campaigns for your brand. However, we all have the tools that we need generally to start creating video that can really connect and can be really, really impactful for your business, whether you're a product-based business or service-based business. So you can learn via workshops or, again, via, you know, tutorials that you might seek out yourself, one-to-ones, etc., that how to improve what you can do at home, because you want to have an element of quality control. You don't want to put out absolutely anything.
Yeah.
But that said, it doesn't have to be perfect. You can learn the types of videos that would work for your brand rather than kind of shooting in the dark. There is strategy behind the videos that work well and that perform consistently. And you can also, the other thing that I do try to help people with is to keep it fun and to keep it achievable, because a very overwhelming video, especially the editing, I think people find that very stressful, I understand. Yeah. So you can learn how to keep it kind of resourceful and just not draining. You know, I don't want it ever to be something that drains. I really want people to be excited about all the different ways. On Instagram alone, there's like 5 different ways to get involved.
It's
or more
wild, I don't know, isn't it? Just kind of go, video. Oh my God, it's like 6 different platforms in one platform now, Instagram.
Right, yeah, I know.
It's so overwhelming. And so, yeah.
It is. So that's, I've enjoyed working with people on that, just to help them kind of just demystify, okay, I can't do everything, and you shouldn't do everything, by the way, with video, like anything else. So what should it look like for me, or what could it look like for me? And how do I achieve that? A, with myself, B, possibly in future with, you know, the shinier, more investment heavy option.
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. Now, as you go forwards, as we kind of start to come out of lockdown and, you know, hopefully you're able to get more work and work on, you know, more projects and stuff. As you go forwards over the next couple of years, what is your goals for your business? Where do you want to take it? What do you want to do? Do you want to bring in a team? Do you want to stay just you? You know, do you want to open like a big media office? What is your goals for your business?
Yes, I definitely didn't know that when I started. I just thought...
Right, I'm really figuring it out now, honestly, for me.
I think you should constantly review it. Actually, at Mumsnet, Justine, the founder, she said she used to hate the question of what's your 5-year plan. She always said, I only have a 6-month plan because things move so quickly. So I think that can be quite good advice. For the foreseeable, I think it will be... just me on paper, as in I'm a single person company, but obviously in reality, there are some shoots where I work with assistants, or I might have someone working on motion graphics with me while I do the shooting and the editing. So I definitely want, you know, to continue that, because when you're freelance and working on your own, that's the bit you miss, isn't it? Like camaraderie of working with the team. So that's what I love about the shoots and the relationships I have with clients. I think what I'm going to focus on in the short term is Self Shoot Club, which is my training platform for people, as you said, that are business owners themselves and want to learn how to best make it work for them.
Oh, I'll sign up for that. That sounds great.
Right. Via workshops, via one-to-ones, possibly via a different model, but that is brand new to me. So I want to figure out how best to make that valuable to people. Mm. And then who knows? Yeah, I've got friends in the industry who've gone both ways, that some of them have production companies, mm. And others have stayed working on their own. So that I'm going to remain open about. And I think I'll be led by the kind, by
what you're inspired
by, the work
by, and yeah definitely.
Yeah,
and you mentioned earlier about success, how your idea of success changes.
Yes.
What do you see as success now?
I think success for me is definitely creativity, it's variety, mm. it's flexibility, so that we can readdress that work life balance, that kind of eternal question.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's just the feeling of doing things that at once you thought were never going to be possible. So for me, when I look back, it would have been entirely possible for me to have never moved to London. I was very, very anxious. I was suffering really badly with panic attacks when I was at uni and younger. And I thought it would have been entirely possible to shrink in that scenario, for my world to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And so I think through, when I look back, we all beat ourselves up, don't we, about, am I doing enough? You know, is my business enough? Is it worth it enough? Whatever.
Syndrome is horrible, and everyone
it just
has
never it. Stops. It never stops. But I think ultimately, if you're doing something that you thought one day, once upon a time, thought was never possible, that is amazing. And also, I watched something quite recently. It was like a Netflix doc. And one of the women sort of tackled this question and said, if you're a woman and you're doing something that you love and you're fired up by, that is a service that you are sort of paying to the broader issue, right? Because you're inspiring other women to put themselves first or do the things that they want to do. And that was quite, that's quite a profound thing to like realize. Yeah.
That's so true, because you are giving a service. You might be inspiring other people, other women.
And we'd never give ourselves that credit. We'd never think that, because we think, oh, my business should be doing more good, or my business should be here and it's only here. But actually, when you think, hang on, this business might not have even existed. And also loads of people might be looking at it and thinking, oh, I could do that. Or that's exciting. Like, that in itself is worth kind of taking stock of and celebrating, I think.
Absolutely right. And reflecting on the journey that you've come from and, you know, the road that you've been on and to where you are now. And, you know, what you said about goals, having long-term goals and stuff, I totally agree. And like, for me, I'm much more of a reactive person anyway. Mm. I tend to lead by my gut and, you know, I get inspired by things. And when I'm told to sit down and do strategy, I'm like, oh my God, it's like algebra in my head. I'm just like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but one thing I just wanted to say on that, what you've just said just made me think of something. If there's anyone that's listening and they think to themselves, oh, my business isn't necessarily where I want it to be right now, I have those feelings too. And everyone who owns a business will have it at some point. And what's really important, or what I tend to do, is I think, okay, who do I look up to? Were they ever at this point as well? Yeah, the likelihood is they were absolutely here. They probably had these imposter syndrome thoughts as well. And look at where they are now. And if they can do it, you can do it. And
yes.
That ties in nicely with what you're saying about even just showing up and just doing something that you love and lights you up will inspire other people. And that's a service as well. So I love that. Well done. Thank you for your really, really inspiring insight, actually, Victoria. I want to know, where can people, well, I know where to find you, but where can people find you? Share your website, your social media. Please go and follow her, but especially her Instagram is just brilliant. She's got so many tips on there about how to do reels as well, and all sorts. So where can people find you?
Yes, I do spend a lot of my time on Instagram, and that is my favorite platform for video, as it happens. So my Instagram is at Video by Victoria, and my website is the same. So it's videobyvictoria.com. And that's got all of my portfolio, my videography, some photography, journalism work, et cetera, and the details of Self Shoot Club if people are interested in one-to-ones and workshops to boost their own content.
So that's a new project that you're launching, and you'll be working with videographers, business owners, people that want to learn more about video?
It's up and running. So I work, I do have one-to-ones. I'm actually seeing the Positive Birth Company later today. We work on a one-to-one basis on their reels at the moment. Over the next 2 months, we're doing that. And I can help people, whether it's, you know, broad thing, like actually, how do I get more confident on camera? Or very specific things, how do I edit in this app, you know? So it's had a soft launch, as we would say in the industry, but that's, something I hope to kind of formalize going forward.
Amazing. Excellent. Now we're going to go on to our grill the guests, which is just so we can get to you a little bit more personally. So these are just some silly questions. So remember, the first thing that comes to mind, all right?
Okay, I'll try and relax. This is hard for a perfectionist.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. So we're going to go first with what is your favorite hot drink?
Oat milk latte.
Cheeky. Who's your favorite singer?
Sam Smith.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Do you have a favorite book?
My Sister's Keeper.
Oh, okay. I've read bits of that. Who do you look up to in business?
Oh, God. Who was the first one to go to it? Okay, I was gonna say Holly Tucker. I was gonna say this girl is on fire. Just working with a team there, Annabelle Carmel. Basically, I know this is not quick fire, but all CEOs who don't act like CEOs, in that they're very, very personable. They don't mind kind of getting stuck in with the creative. A lot of those.
With you. And I love Holly Tucker, and I'd love to have her on the podcast. In fact, I've messaged her. I'm like, Holly, I would just love to hear her story. I think she's really inspiring.
Yeah.
Jasmine Starr is another one who is a CEO.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it, and I love her. If you could be stranded on a desert island with anyone else, who would it be?
Oh no, maybe choose between my family and my partner.
It can be anyone. There's no judgment. Anyone at all. Okay, for example, mine is Barbara Streisand.
Okay, right, let's take out family and partner. Okay, family, it has to be someone that would be really, really fun.
Yes.
To hang out with, or really interesting. Oprah? Oprah's got a lot of stories.
She's got,
she could Queen?
Yeah,
would the Queen be hilarious on a
I actually do wonder that about our Queen. I kind of feel like she would be quite fun to have a few Chardonnays with.
That's going to keep me up later. I'm going to think of someone really perfect for that scenario.
Where is your favourite place to visit?
Cornwall.
Yeah, anywhere particularly in Cornwall?
Gadrevy, which has amazing cliff face and a beautiful lighthouse. Yeah. I used to go there with my family and spend a lot of time in the sea and
love
having picnics in all weathers.
Literally all weathers. I know. Live in Somerset and we still do that now. So what I'd like to know, last question, what do you love most about your job?
The storytelling, the sense of it being a project from start to finish, really understanding it. Coming up with the idea and seeing it come to life, and I've always said this: whatever the format, whether I was writing a feature or producing a video, like the biggest compliment was when the interviewee or the client in this case would get it and they'd say, "Yeah, that's me. You got me." And so that for me is like the seal of approval.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Lovely. Thank you so much, Victoria. You've been an absolute gem of a guest. It's been really interesting hearing your journey, getting your insight. And, I think you would have inspired some people today. So thank you so much for coming on Small Business Stories. You've been a pleasure. So you guys, you have Victoria's social media handles there. Go and follow her. Check her out on her website as well. And if you want to work with her, you never know, you might be the fit for her as well. The right fit for her. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in, guys. To our friends all over the world who are listening, thank you so much for tuning in, as always, and showing up with us. Take care, everyone. So what did you think of our chat with Victoria from Video by Victoria? I loved hearing her journey and her story and also her mindset on things as well. I think that's something that we rarely kind of talk about in our own businesses. So really, really good to hear her perspective and her take on things, get some advice and tips. If you want to go into the creative industries, any that we've discussed in this podcast, well, take some of Victoria's tips for sure. Just want to say a big hello to you all. I hope that you're all well. I hope that wherever you are in the world, you are healthy and happy and loving life. Don't forget to go and follow us. So you want to look for Purely Personal Marketing on Facebook, Facebook and on Instagram. Check out our website, www.purelypersonalmarketing.co.uk. As always, thank you so much for listening. Take care, look after yourselves, and tune in next time. Have a good one.